Die guten Seiten der Zukunft. Der Ökom-Podcast.
Hallo zusammen, willkommen zur vierten Ausgabe unseres Ökom-Podcasts. Ich bin Manuel Schneider. Sie gilt als eine der führenden Globalisierungskritikerinnen und ist weltweit bekannt für ihren scharfen Auseinandersetzungen mit der Agrarindustrie. Mit ihren Reden und zahllosen Auftritten in der Öffentlichkeit, ihren Büchern und konkreten Projekten vor Ort inspiriert sie Menschen auf der ganzen Welt. Die Rede ist von der indischen Physikerin und Aktivistin Vandana Shiva. Sie bringt seit vielen Jahren tausende Anhänger für mehr Umweltschutz, den Erhalt der biologischen Vielfalt und für die Wahrung der Rechte der Frauen auf die Straße. Wir alle haben es in der Hand, den Lauf der Welt zu ändern. So lautet die motivierende, zugleich aber auch herausfordernde Aufforderung Vandana Shivas an die Zivilgesellschaft. In der Tradition Mahatma Gandhis ruft Vandana Shiva zu zivilem Ungehorsam auf, zu politischem Engagement und gewaltfreien Widerstand gegen Konzerne wie Bayer Monsanto und ihrem agrarindustriellen Entwicklungskonzept, gegen das Patentieren von Saatgut, gegen den massiven Einsatz von Pestiziden und die weltweite Zerstörung bäuerlicher Existenzen. Ihr Gegenentwurf? Eine ökologische und nachhaltige Landnutzung, die in der Hand von Bäuerinnen und Bauern liegt und nicht in der Hand multinationaler Konzerne. Im Zentrum steht dabei als Grundlage allen Überlebens der Erhalt der Natur und ihrer biologischen Vielfalt. In ihrer Heimat Indien hat Vandana Shiva das sogenannte Navdanya-Netzwerk gegründet, mit dem sie Kleinbäuerinnen und Bauern fördert und vor allem Saatgut von regionalen Pflanzen bewahrt. In 22 Bundesstaaten Indiens aktiv hat das Netzwerk bislang bereits knapp 1 Million Kleinbäuerinnen und Bauern in biologischer Landwirtschaft ausgebildet. Als Mitglied des renommierten Club of Rome und Trägerin des alternativen Nobelpreises geht Vandana Shivas Einfluss jedoch weit über Indien hinaus. Ihre zentrale Botschaft, eine andere Welt, ist möglich. So lautet auch der Titel des Buches, das die indische Aktivistin mit dem französischen Journalisten Lionel Astruc vor wenigen Monaten im Ökom Verlag veröffentlicht hat. Das Buch vereint alle zentralen Themen Vandana Shivas, von der Saatgutfreiheit bis zum Ökofeminismus, von der Globalisierungskritik bis zu neuen Formen von Demokratie. Im Januar war Vandana Shiva bei uns im Münchner Zukunftssalon und hat dort ihr Buch vorgestellt. Wir haben die Gelegenheit genutzt, um mit ihr ein kurzes Interview zu führen. In ihm erläutert sie, welche Bedeutung der Erhalt der biologischen Vielfalt nicht nur für die Ernährung der Weltbevölkerung, sondern auch für Demokratie und Frieden zukommt. Und welche Inspiration sie aus der indischen Geschichte für ihre eigene Arbeit zieht. Das Interview wurde auf Englisch geführt. Eine Übersetzung der Antworten von Vandana Shiva ins Deutsche finden Sie zum Download als PDF in den Shownotes dieses Podcasts. Die erste Frage, die wir Vandana Shiva gestellt haben, ist eine ganz grundlegende. Über Klimaschutz und Nachhaltigkeit reden wir schon seit vielen Jahren und zweifellos hat die gesellschaftliche Wahrnehmung der Klimakrise nicht zuletzt durch die Fridays for Future Bewegung deutlich zugenommen. Und dennoch passiert wenig oder zumindest zu wenig, sowohl auf politischer Ebene als auch im Alltag. Woran liegt das? Was müsste aus Ihrer Sicht in Zukunft geschehen, um den Planeten, auf dem wir leben und von dem wir leben, nicht weiter zu zerstören, um ein Leben der Menschheit nachhaltig zu sichern?
I think the most important thing is a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a way of thinking. And that way of thinking is actually extremely recent and shaped by an extremely small group of very, very powerful men who then defined it as universal knowledge and the very basis of science. This paradigm is based on mechanistic thought, Cartesian thought, Newtonian thought, that the world is fragmented, the world is essential and immutable, it does not change, it cannot change, that the earth is dead matter and its value is given when it's exploited as raw material but has no value in of itself. And this is all a product of the fossil age and the age of colonization. If we shift this, and it's not that all of humanity has to shift it, I said a very tiny humanity put it in place. The people who assume this to be the only way are also a minority. Most of the world, all indigenous people, realize that the earth is alive and they see the world as interconnected. And that's why I've written my new book, Oneness versus the 1%. The 1% is locked. Oneness is where the change will come. Indigenous people are rising everywhere and saying, no, you will not destroy our Mother Earth. Women are rising everywhere. I evolved the philosophy that is called ecofeminism. And all around the world, that's what young people, men and women, are looking for. That there's a way out of capitalist patriarchy to recognize that women who have been dominated and treated as secondary citizens are equal partners, and the earth, which has been treated as a mine for resources or a trash can for waste, that we can change this thinking. The children are on the streets. The farmers are protesting. And now that new alliances are getting built, recognizing that the bee and the farmer will either survive together or neither will survive, these are amazing new interconnections that are being made. And if we look at them, we don't feel the burden of trying to change the minority that presents itself as the whole.
Unsere zweite Frage blickt nach Indien. Denn auch dort, wie überall auf der Welt, setzen sich Menschen für Artenvielfalt und Nachhaltigkeit ein. Wir wollten von Vandana Shiva wissen, was das zivilgesellschaftliche Engagement in Indien mit dem in Europa verbindet.
When I started my work on saving seeds in 1987, and I was writing at that time, and I used to define India as a biodiversity economy. And the West industrialized was the fossil economy. But of course, the fossil infection has spread all over in the name of development. Most of the Indians still live in a biodiverse economy. So when we conserve biodiversity and we change the paradigm, we show that what matters is nutrition per acre, not yield of empty commodities per acre. We show that we can feed the world while conserving biodiversity. That other species and humans are not in competition with each other, but they cooperate with each other. And if you go to the mountains of Bavaria, as I was last night, the small dairy farmers are totally aware that milk is a product of the plants which are eaten by the cow. And therefore, your good milk is biodiversity. So no matter where in the world you are, this link between species and the web of life through food as what weaves the web of life as a nutrition cycle, that's a foundational, ecological, universal principle. And the colonialism divided us, fossil age divided us, but these are two huge errors of humanity. And we don't have to treat these errors as the defining of the future of either humans or the earth.
Unsere dritte Frage an Vandana Shiva: Warum ist unser Ernährungssystem so instabil und was können wir tun, um den Hunger auf der Welt zu besiegen und Nahrungssicherheit für alle Menschen zu gewährleisten?
We have been made to believe that industrial agriculture with monocultures, chemically intensive production, fossil fuel intensive production, produces more food. And the trick begins with the measure of yield. You see, it has more yield. But if all I'm growing is a monoculture of corn, of course I'll have lots of corn. Not such a big achievement. But if I'm having corn and beans, I'll have beans and corn. And the soil will have nitrogen. And if I have diverse kinds of corn and diverse kinds of beans, then I have resilience in my field. This biodiversity system is what I have practiced, promoted, and defended, And in India, we call it Navdanya, which means nine seeds. It's called Milpa in Mexico. So when you measure the biodiversity as a true output, you find that the more biodiverse the land is, the more food it produces, not just for humans, but for all species. So the way to address hunger is actually to produce more nutrition per acre by intensifying biodiversity, not by intensifying industrial agriculture. Intensifying industrial agriculture has a very heavy footprint. And that's why the appetite for biofuels, the appetite for animal feed, is so limitless that they're having to go burn the Amazon. No small farmer has had to burn another country's forests. If we take the full ecological footprint into account, industrial agriculture is a hugely inefficient system. Uses large acreages to produce something that's not even eaten by humans. Only 10% of the corn and soya is eaten by humans. The rest goes for biofuel and animal feed. So how do we shift? We shift by recognizing food as the currency of life, therefore respecting the ecological systems that produce food, protecting the bees and the butterflies, protecting the biodiversity of the plants, and making agriculture primarily the conservation of the biodiversity of the planet. We get food, but we now get high-quality diversified food. And the problem of the monoculture of the mind is looking at one product that's empty of nutrition, full of toxics. That's not food. When we get biodiverse food, it has enough for all. But biodiversity goes hand in hand with decentralization. Globalization, rules written by the Cargills and the Monsantos and the Nestles and the Pepsis, have given us this commodity trade and hunger. Decentralization and circular economies and true free trade, free for nature, free for the bee, free for the cow, free for the child, and free for the farmer, and free for us in terms of food freedom. We eat the right thing, we eat good food for all. Our work in India has shown that we can feed 2 times India's population by conserving biodiversity. If we can do it in India, this can be done all over the world. We then bring trade to fair trade of that which you can't grow. So it's all right for you to get our spices. You can't grow pepper here. That's fine. That's how we traded. That's what we used to export from India. That's why the East India Company was created, to try and colonize us, because we had the spices. The Alps are beautiful medicinal plants. The Himalayas have beautiful medicinal plants. We need to start diversifying our idea of what comes from the land. And agriculture must return to its original roots. Agriculture, the care and culture of the land. Once we do that, we'll have enough food for all beings, including good food for all human beings. No child will starve. No person will be deprived of good food.
Mit der vierten und vorletzten Frage greifen wir ein zentrales Thema Ihres jüngsten Buches auf. Welche Rolle spielen gewaltfreier Widerstand und ziviler Ungehorsam für die Ermöglichung einer anderen Welt?
Well, you know, it's nearly 5 decades since my activism to protect the earth. And beginning with the amazing movement of women who came out and said, we're going to hug the trees, you'll have to kill us before you kill the tree. It was a civil disobedience through the act of hugging trees. And it was called CHIPCO, which means to hug. I worked with communities that fought mining, where they literally hug the forests and the mountains and the rocks. I have worked with communities that have hugged the rivers and said, you cannot build a dam. My own work on Navdanya and seed saving, which I started in 1987, began with a commitment of civil disobedience against patent laws. And I call it the seed satyagraha. And I learned this from Gandhi. Gandhi engaged in 2 amazing civil disobediences. First was in South Africa. He went to South Africa as a lawyer. And then the British were starting to pass laws. The British fought with the Boers and then took over. And then they started to pass laws to discriminate against the Indians and basically require Indians to have a compulsory registration paper, which had to be carried all the time. They could get into your house and ask an eight-year-old child to show. This discrimination on race was unacceptable to Gandhi. And so he and the Indians started a non-cooperation civil disobedience, which then over years, much later when the apartheid was created, became the basis of fighting racism and anti-apartheid. Apartheid means to separate. Gandhi's first satyagraha, which is civil disobedience and means satya, truth, agraha, force, the force of truth. The force of the truth of our one humanity is violated when we discriminate on race. So we must disobey every law. The civil rights movement of North America was inspired by Gandhi, Martin Luther King, even South Africa's anti-apartheid struggle. When he came back to India, he first joined the movement against the forced cultivation of indigo. Indigo was a very, very valuable natural dye. The British wanted control of it, but was forcing the peasants to grow indigo while the peasants starved. The protests were there. Gandhi came back, joined it, and in 1917, he did the satyagraha, the civil disobedience against planting indigo. And in 1930, the British wanted to monopolize our salt, because monopolies create super incomes, especially when they're on essential things like salt, which we must eat every day. And Gandhi walked to the beach and picked up the salt and said, "We need it for our survival. We will continue to make salt because nature gives it for free. Your laws we will not obey." And that brought down the salt laws. So when Monsanto and others wanted to patent seed through genetic engineering, I took inspiration from Gandhi's salt satyagraha. And I said, I'll fight to not allow such laws to be put in place. And we don't have them in India. Our law says plants and animals and seeds are not patentable. But I said, even if our governments are corrupted, which is totally possible, we will not obey, because we have to obey the higher law of life, of biodiversity, of the seed. Seed must renew. Seed must be exchanged. And so we started the seed satyagraha. And we continue it. Every 10 years, the corporations make an attempt to make it illegal for farmers to save seeds. We revive our seed satyagraha. Just done it again. There's a new law on the seed they're trying to pass. We've just spread the word among the communities, and we refuse to obey. The beauty of satyagraha is you can never lose. Because satyagraha is about your truth. And as long as you don't give that up, they can't take your truth away from you.
Die letzte Frage an Vandana Shiva versucht nochmals den Bogen zu spannen zwischen ökologischen und politischen Zusammenhängen. Warum ist der Kampf für biologische Vielfalt immer auch ein Kampf für Demokratie und Frieden?
Biodiversity is democracy. Our national poet Tagore wrote a beautiful essay called The Povan. And he said, India is special because our civilization did not build giant buildings. Our learned people went to the forest to learn democracy. And in the forest, the tiniest of herbs and the biggest of trees are equal. They're different, but equal in standing, equal in the right to exist. The animal and the plants have equal right to existence. And it's from the forest we learn democracy. It's from biodiversity we learned democracy. But when you learn democracy through diversity, you create the conditions of peace. So Tagore also wrote our national anthem, and I've written a blog recently, because of the way hate is dividing and creating this domination of an assumed superior religion, a superior race, a superior person. That idea of superiority was the basis of colonialism. It was justified on the civilizing mission of the Christian Europeans. It was basically a plunder of resources, but justified in the civilizing mission. We have a resurgence of this syndrome of superiority. And the syndrome of superiority rules through divide and rule. It spreads hate. Tagore's first para of our national anthem is how beautifully diverse the land is. And, you know, the different mountains, the different rivers, the different climates. We have all the plants of the world. We have the Arctic in the Himalaya, and we have the Sahara in our desert, and we have the rainforest in the Western Ghats. But he goes on to say, and religions came from all over the world and wove gardens of hope. We have made religion a reason for conflict. So my blog is Growing Gardens of Diversity, Weaving Garlands of Love. Biodiversity is where we will find democracy, where we will find peace. And that's why we must cultivate it, both in nature and in culture.
Das war der Ökom-Podcast, heute mit der indischen Umweltaktivistin Vandana Shiva. Schön, dass Sie dabei waren. Weitere Infos finden Sie unter www.ökom-verein.de. Wir freuen uns über Kommentare und Anregungen. Danke fürs Zuhören und bis zum nächsten Mal.